Hey everyone, and welcome to The Pull, the show where we talk about the books that come out each week. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Joel, who you can find over on Twitter, at Cape Joel. I'm Tiffany.
Hello.
You can find me over at The Real Zoobs. We got a lot of books to talk about this week. Lots is happening all over the place. Like I said, we probably will cover some books a little more in-depthly this time around, but we're going to try and talk about as many as we can in the time that we have with you guys. So why don't we jump right into it and talk about Batman number 29, the book that people might be excited for, but it's not the one everyone's here for right now.
Yeah, let's face it. There was another Batman-centric book this week. I know I didn't read this one first.
Well, how about this one? Batman 29 did not have a midnight release.
No, it did not.
So let's go over what happened in Batman 29.
It's a dinner party. It's a big, fancy, nine-course French dinner party.
It really is. It's kind of an interesting twist. I honestly did not see this coming. I didn't see, like, a part of this story being this, like, semi-diplomatic, fact-finding dinner.
Yeah. It's also one of those things where it's like, you know, there's so little connective tissue, it would seem, between these War of Jokes and Riddles issues. It opens up and we're just at the dinner party. I'm like, how the fuck did we get here?
Yeah. Obviously, this is something that Batman is doing on his own. Like, he has his reasoning behind this. But I would love to see how the invitation was delivered.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a pretty big thing to leave out. But once again, as Tom King has made it very clear in this whole storyline, the real stuff happens in the margins, man. It happens in between the books, man.
Well, I mean, even for me, it's just kind of, it's either a very, like, scary, which obviously it probably would be, but, like, also sort of semi-funny image of either, like, someone from the GCPD doing this or Alfred delivering
You know he sent Alfred. Alfred was there in, like, his biker leathers on, like, a really fast motorcycle just throwing the invitations and driving away.
Right? Like, a la being a paperboy. Yeah, just a lot of interesting stuff here. A lot of writing, a lot of talking, a lot of character development in a sense for these two, and like just seemingly making sure that we understand where each of them is coming from. And like we have, but very much like just two very different schools of thought in terms of these villains. Like Riddler is like.
Are they different schools of thought, though? They both want to kill Batman, which is how this started.
But I mean, in their approach, like, the Riddler is overanalyzing, you know, trying to take an intellectual stance on it, whether or not it's that overanalysis where, like, he's trying to prove himself even though he doesn't need to. And then the flip side of it, you got the Joker, who's very much just like, yeah, but I'm the Joker, so...
I will admit the Joker hit one point pretty solidly when Bruce says, now, why do you think that you should have the right to kill Batman? What makes you so special? And the Joker's reasoning is basically, because I'm the Joker and no one cares about the Riddler. That's why.
Yeah. And for a minute, I think like the Joker tried to invoke his fans in saying that.
Keep in mind, while they talk, they do that thing where the characters look directly at you, the reader, while they talk.
Yeah, they very much do. They do. It's funny. It's like this issue is seemingly also just building camps for the fans. You know what I mean? Like, they kind of presented their arguments, like, you know, hey, this is what I'm all about. This is, like, my reasoning, like, regardless of, like, the means to the ends. And Joker, like, weirdly enough, like, in this issue... kind of, I guess, has completely accepted the Riddler's thought process that, like, the reason he can't laugh is because he needs to kill Batman, which is strangely, like, interesting to me, because that seemed like something that would happen to the Joker at the end, you know, at the end where the Joker's like, oh yeah, I guess you were right, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of thing, but, like, it seems like at some point, like, he was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna kill Batman. Then I'll laugh.
He came to it pretty quickly. I love Bruce in this one, too. It's like, well, as the richest and most important man in all of Fancy Town, I have taken it upon myself to sit you two down and talk about some sort of armistice. I have no military or police backing, nor indeed any negotiating training to do this, as far as they know. Obviously, we as the reader know he's Batman. But I like that both the supervillains are like, we agree, yes.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, yeah, sure, whatever. I will say, out of this book, the first, like, interaction, really, panel-wise, of, like, you got, you know, like, the Riddler, and then Bruce, and then the Riddler, and then Joker, and the Riddler is laughing. And I thought that was really funny because it's just such a slight to the Joker. He's just like, we're all having a good time and I can laugh and enjoy myself. How about you?
Nygma is also a ninja now with the ability to grab cutlery out of the air.
Yeah, I kind of thought one of his, like
goons would grab it for him.
Yeah, honestly, I really did.
Despite having goons, they're not doing much, do they? They're more set dressing than anything.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And, like, they only almost erupt into a fight, you know, once. I'm pretty surprised.
it's a very Sharks and Jets moment is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we going to rumble? Are we going to rumble with them greasy Riddlers?
So, you know, it's interesting, too, because, like, GCPD clearly has no idea this is going on, maybe? Like, I'm not sure. Like, yes and no.
I think he told Gordon is what they seek to imply.
Yeah, and that was it. Like, he's just like, this is gonna happen, and that's it. But, like, so, you know, kind of semi-spoilers, but, like, this is hinting that Batman's kind of, like, sin is that, like, he seemingly bankrolled one of these guys?
Yes, because he felt he...
pointing?
Yeah, because he feels he couldn't defeat them both at the same time, despite the fact in the future he will not only be able to defeat them both easily at the same time, he will do it multiple times throughout his career.
Yeah, no, it's true. Or if we're going to see something where we end up having a twist, in a sense, you know, where it's
I am almost certain there'll be a twist.
Yeah, yeah, where it's just like, well, I was going to do this, but then no, I'm not going to do this.
It can't possibly be this simple, because nothing with Tom King is that simple.
Right? I mean, in a way, this is, like, a fairly, like, thought-provoking issue. Like, again, like, there's a lot said here. I'm wondering how much of this is necessarily subtext, how much of this is just, you know, Tom King exploring the characters that he's, you know, working with at this moment. Because, you know, as we know, in the current-day continuity, well, outside of a certain event that's going on, like, there's a question of the Joker and such, so, like, it's not been a character that King's really been able to use or to, like, you know, work with.
No. Anyone, for that matter.
Yeah, but I'm just kind of wondering if King is just taking advantage of the, like, page space he has and just, you know, having a nice time, in a way. Which is bizarre because it's such a violent, angry, horrible time that's going...
Yeah, I know, right?
...that Gotham's going through.
Can I say, too, for all the foodies out there, man, you get your Food Network food porn in this one, too, because we lovingly get to see a 9-course French meal laid out for you, and you got sorbets and confits with cream friche and everything else.
Right? You know what I really, honestly, like, something that I thought was really, really very, like, nice takeaway from this is that we hear so much about, you know, Bruce and his father. You know, like, especially in the past year with him running into him, you know what I mean? Like, the whole thing, right? But to just have this moment where, like, he instead invokes a memory of his mother and a lesson that she taught him. And then at the end of this being, like, how she would have been disappointed because of the sort of host that he was.
Not you didn't offer them coffee or brandy. Fail as a host, son.
Exactly, exactly. And I was like, that's really sweet. Like, to just have this, like, quiet moment. To, like, kind of, like, get a you know, another level to his mom.
I did enjoy that. Like, we know so little about Martha Wayne.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, that was really, really nice and very welcoming. But again, like, not... Like, a lot happens in this issue in a way, but not a lot happens in this issue. Like, it's just another set up to something greater. Again, like, we're fact-finding with Batman. We're doing the detective work with him, in a sense, which is kind of proof that while incredibly dangerous, sometimes it's not the most exciting aspect or element to...
Here's something I thought just as they were all walking away there. Hey, Alfred, why didn't you drug the food? Like, they all ate... Why didn't you put, like, knockout drops in the food and then, like, you could have, like, arrested them or, like, kicked them while they were asleep? I think that would have ended the war pretty quick.
Yeah, but, like, the gangs didn't eat. Like, they would just be, you know, hanging out.
you don't think they snuck a little off the plate? They weren't having some leftovers, scraps?
I like to think in that scenario, they're like, oh, thank God you did it. Okay, cool. Yeah, we don't want any part of this. We're gonna go.
We got browbeaten into this. We want to leave now.
Oh, that's right. Someone recalled that there are hostages. That, you know, again, it's two very different takes on it. The Riddler, seemingly an honorable individual in a weird way, being like, no, of course I'll let them go. Like, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, like, the Joker's like, yeah, I probably killed them. I don't remember.
I probably killed them before I started, who knows?
Right? And very much like an interesting read that the Riddler has on the Joker in general, the way he dresses him down and like what he thinks of him, like you know, like it kind of comes down to like he's either 100% correct or 100% wrong.
It reminded me very much of Max Landis's take on Superman when he did like an Adventures of Superman or something, where it's like, look, you know, everyone wants to, what is it, project on you this great tragedy that explains why you're the monster that you are, but I actually think you're the most boring person in the world, and that's why people project on you.
No, it's true, and I think we can go more into depth. But before we do that, I want to say thank you so much to Mr. Giggles for the super chat. He says, appreciate the food detail. I am in the food industry, which
Oh,
I
no
am
kidding.
totally with you there. Like, they were so like detailed and just
And
very attractive
loving.
looking. Like, yeah. There was a part of me though, where I was just like, I couldn't. I don't think I could eat my way through that many courses.
No, it's a little much. And it's in the French style too, so you get your salad near the end. That just does my head
Yeah,
in.
the salad and the cheese is at the end. Yeah,
Yeah, you start with your salad and your cheese, then you move to the other stuff everywhere else in the world. Salad and cheese to me is promise that food is coming.
Right? They're like, no, we're just gonna end it with that. You end it on the vegetable scope.
Yeah, there you go.
But how about this? If the Riddler is correct and the Joker really is just like this normal individual, the things that he does and the crimes and the atrocities that he commits, he can't possibly be. Like, you know what I mean? Like, perhaps he's not the monster that Gotham and the Riddler seems to think that, you know, is what he portrays, but like there's something definitely wrong with him.
But then there might also be three Jokers, so who the hell
No,
knows?
it's true. It's very true. But this is in the past, so
There's a lot up in the air. That's the problem with every prequel story like this. It's like, will any of this matter? Will any of this be adhered to? Or is this only in the mind of Tom King?
Right, and that's true. I mean, like this again, this could just be very much be a thought exercise for him, just something to explore these two characters, who honestly have like, in my opinion, like these portrayals of them have a very different approach to not only the situation but like crime itself. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the Riddler is a less like zany, you know, crazy individual that at times he's been portrayed as. I mean, over time he's definitely had
Frank
many.
Gorshin, man.
Yeah, exactly. He's had many different portrayals, like even leading up to like the animated series where he was a little bit more like calculating and cold, which is kind of like closer to this, and I think even some more recent versions of him.
Like the Telltale video game right now where he's friggin' Jigsaw. I can't believe it took people that long to make Riddler into Jigsaw.
Right. But like, he has this way of like overcomplicating things, which is like very, I think on par with who the Riddler is. You know, like he's always like, okay, it's a great thing and it's a great riddle, and I'm gonna trick Batman, and like that's very on par with him. Even with here, even the way he speaks, the way that like again, like when he dresses down Joker, just the like the depth in which he goes into, even his plan to get rid of Batman, very over the top, lots of steps, lots of moving parts,
A lot of needless steps, you could argue, is the thing. But then again, isn't that Riddler? If he was smart, he wouldn't leave a riddle.
exactly. And then on the flip side of this, you have the Joker, who in this portrayal is very much like, no, I'm just gonna get the job done. And like his like version in which he states that he would strangle him, it's weirdly personal. It's a very personal way to do it. Like he wants to like be the one to physically like take the life of Batman with his own hands, to feel it, to have like this like very again like emotional connection.
Yeah, I want to feel the sinew on his neck break and leave him with a smile.
Yeah, exactly. But before we finish up and wrap up with this book, I want to say thank you so much to Tevye Smolka for your super chat. So kind of you. Thank you so much. And we get a golf clap.
Heart punch. I forgot that's my thing. I tried to push golf clap, but no one really was getting onto it. So yeah, heart punch. I got to bring heart punch back. But when we make the pull merchandise, that's got to be a shirt right there. Heart punch.
Yeah, there you go. Done. So overall, like again, this book. This part of this story, seemingly weirdly, is like kind of like out of nowhere in a sense, and it's an interesting stop along the way. And
Every issue's been out of nowhere as far as I'm concerned.
yeah. And I gotta tell you, honestly, this issue in particular makes me wonder what this is gonna be like as a trade read.
Oh, God, yeah, definitely.
Like I wonder if it'll be strengthened. You know what I mean? Like, will they put the Ballad of Kite Man in there, or will that be removed to the end and we'll just see the book in its order? But again, like, I'm wondering how it'll be for those who may not be picking it up in individual issues. If they pick it up in trade, I wonder what their take on it's going to be. If it'll feel less, like, kind of disjointed.
Word.
Well, there you go, guys. That was Batman number 29, the next step in the epic story that is Wojar. you know, if at this point you haven't been on board, this is not the time to start deciding that you want to pick up Batman. Because could you imagine that? Someone never picking up a Batman story, or like hasn't been reading it for years and years. They're like, I'm going to pick up a Batman story. And this is the first one they pick up. And they're like, okay,
I weep for them. I freaking weep for them.
Right? Just very, very interesting. All right. Anyway, now we're going to move on. We're going to stay in the DC universe for a little bit. And we're going to talk about Superman this week, Superman number 29. We were teased Parallax at the end of the last issue, and that is indeed what we got this week. Honestly, out of the gate, I thought that this story was really interesting and, like, just a, like, fun, sort of dark, creepy, like feeling to it. It was just, like, another element to Superman. Again, in this one, like, really, it's going to come down to Superman having to overcome, like, a greater force in the universe. We start off with a child. He's nicknamed Z. I think his name's, like, Zachariah or Zachary. And he's playing essentially Pokemon Go, but in the DC universe. So he's, like, exploring. You know, they say, like, don't go off the path when you're playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah, he goes off, like, the path.
This is the advertisement for not doing that. don't do it, because what will happen is you'll find Parallax.
Just hanging out.
Yeah, just don't do it. Just sit in one place. Go to the Starbucks. Just play there. but he's wandering around and he finds, like, a little yellow creature, and he assumes that it's one of the things from his phone. Look, I didn't. I'm not a child. You know what I mean?
Like, we didn't say this kid was smart. No, freaking, you know.
At the very least, this child is ready for the call to action. He's ready. He picks it up. He's like, I'm gonna take care of you. And then we cut to 2 weeks later, and Superman is, like, flying around in Metropolis, and he's kind of having, like, this inner monologue where he's freaking out because, like, children have been going missing over the past 2 weeks. Every single night a child goes missing.
Uh-oh.
And, like, every morning Superman wakes up and is terrified that John won't be in his bed, which is fair because in recent history, you know, John has had some not-so-hot things happen to him.
He's had some crazy adventures.
Exactly, exactly. So Superman's actually working with the police, with the newspapers, of course, being Clark Kent, to help these parents find their children. And, like, honestly, at the end of the day, the kids the parents are very thankful, but they don't feel like much is happening because, like, every single night a new child is taken and a new parent ends up joining this, like, group, essentially this club. So they decide they're gonna, you know, start publishing, some of the photos of the parents in the paper because they want to try to humanize the children on the off chance that whoever took them is some sort of, like, you know, Buffalo Bill-esque, like, serial killer.
There you go. And big old fat person.
Yeah.
Thank you. I've been sitting on that Buffalo Bill voice this whole time. Hey, I never thought I'd get a chance to
totally set you up for that one.
Would you help me move this couch? No. Well, would you?
Oh, that is, like, the thing I'm like, no. Every time I'm like, don't. I love that movie in, like, the, like, most creepy way I could. But every time that scene, I'm like, don't help him! That poor cat's trapped inside. Who's going to feed it? So Jimmy Olsen shows up. He's going to take photos of all of the parents. And
been a bit since we've seen Jimmy.
Yeah, but every time he goes to try to take a photo, the photo comes out yellow tinted.
Oh.
And he mentions that. He's just like, oh, that's really weird. And that's about the time that Superman, like, starts, like, kind of using his various visions, essentially, to, like, to look for a specific energy. And what he finds are yellow footprints. And he mentions that the energy feels kind of emotional.
Ooh.
And he comments that the lanterns are not in this sector right now. They had to go off. They're doing something else. So I appreciate that. We've established it all, okay? We have established that, A, we're dealing with emotional energy. B, the lanterns aren't around. They can't help. It's just, sorry. Like, if there's lantern business...
So you will never have to ask, why doesn't Hal or the other two come?
Exactly. Now they're busy. They're off doing something else. anyway, he follows their footprints. It's literally, it's a trail of footprints, and they're small. They're like child-sized footprints. He's like, hmm. And he comes across Z, and he's leading away a young girl. And we saw him earlier picking her up, and he had a crazy, scary, inhuman, toothy grin and a bizarre voice. And he threatened
her
parents.
This is some Pied Piper of Hamelin shit right here.
Oh, yeah. He threatens her parents, so she goes along. And then, of course, she goes along because she's also infected, possessed, whatever you want to say, by the entity within him. And Superman does his Superman thing, like, hey, man, there's a curfew out there. You got to go to bed. You got to get out of here. There's, like, I don't know if you know this, but people are stealing children. I don't want to frighten you or anything.
You got to get your 8 hours, true American, and do your homework.
I think for a kid, it's more than that. It's, like, 10 hours. Like, you got to drink your milk and do your homework and, like,
say your prayers.
Yeah, whatever it is. You got to just do it. Stay away from video games. But, so he immediately, like, Z attacks Superman. Like, he like, lets loose with this, like, yellow energy. And Superman's like, all right, it's on then. And he assumes that it's something to do with Sinestro. And so he freezes the child. And when he turns around, the little girl is now talking in the same voice because it's within her as well.
Because we are Legion, we are many.
Yeah, essentially. And he, like, they end up, like, essentially defeating Superman, but they've also been looking for him. They have been, they're excited but that they found him, but in the end they leave him there. A couple cops find him and they hilariously wake him up. They're like, you want help getting up? Do you need help? They're like, he's like, I'm good, thank you. He's very polite about it, but like, I'm Superman.
Oh no, Superman had one too many and now he's sleeping it off in the ditch.
Exactly, that kind of thing.
He'd have like TMZ on him so quick.
I know. So Superman flies up and he, essentially attempts to, like, use his vision to, like, kind of shrink down the amount of spectrums that he's seeing so he can find out where exactly the energy is coming from. This hurts him to do so because of the emotional nature of the energy.
Right.
We come to an abandoned building because all great villains take, like, refuge in abandoned buildings.
And because in the comic universe, you know, the real estate market is always down, so there's a plethora of abandoned buildings for you to hide in.
That's exactly it. Though I think it's the school, the abandoned school. It looks like a school that we originally saw there, but still. And we find that Z has all the children that were stolen in this, like, web of energy all, like, strung up all over the room, and it's glowing, and they're all, like, crying for Superman to help. And like, Z's like, nah, this is great. You're totally afraid. You're afraid of losing your son. You're afraid of what's going to happen to these kids. And that's going to really work out great for me. It's really working out for me. I really, so happy you're doing that.
Feed on fear. It's delicious.
Exactly. And at this point, Superman's pretty much figured out that it's Parallax. And then Parallax, like, creepily crawls out of the kid's mouth.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really well rendered, and like at the same time I'm like, oh, it's really well rendered. And he arrives and he's gigantic, and they begin to fight, and Parallax is attempting to essentially get into Superman. He wants Superman's body,
because who wouldn't,
right? I mean, like, look at him, he's cut, he's handsome, yeah, it's all good.
It's a lot of power, you know.
I go for the shallow element. You're like, no, he's strong. I'm like, yeah, that too.
He's sure. Well, and he's got a wicked outfit, too. Who wouldn't want to be able to rock a cape and not get looked at like a weirdo?
Fair enough.
That's the reason Cape Joel would possess Superman, just so he could have a proper cape.
You could do it. You could pull it off, Joel. You'd be fine.
It's mine now.
Right? Just go for it. So Parallax actually starts to get into Superman. And Superman pushes him off, being like, you know, courage is essentially like holding off fear for one more minute. He's like, you're never going to get in there. You're never going to get me. I'm never going to have that much fear that lets that happen. And Parallax is like, all right, cool. And he starts reciting, like, his own, like, motto, essentially. Rhyme, poem, oath. Oath! That's the word! Thanks, brain. And that's about the time that all of the children start crying out in pain because he's essentially killing them all simultaneously.
Oh.
And Superman's like, okay, no, we can't do that. I want you to stop this and just take me. It's fine. I can't let you do that. Which is like, I get it. He's Superman. He has to save these children. But at the same time, you literally just put your body into the hands of
an evil bug thing.
Right?
Like, that could destroy planets.
Just, alright, well. So he crawls in and we get to see Yellow Lantern Superman, and it is amazing.
It's a pretty wicked image.
Such a great image. I absolutely love it. But it doesn't stop there. Like, you think, oh, that's the end reveal? No. Because at that point we hear a voice behind them saying, like, hey, you got something I want, and it's Sinestro.
Ah, this looks like a job for Sinestro.
I know. I'm like, this is awesome. So the next issue, they're teasing Super Parallax versus Sinestro. Yeah.
I love it. I love everything about it.
I know. This is such, like, this is so much fun. Again, it has, like, this, like, you know, greater, like, you know, cosmic sort of, like, ramifications to it. You know, now that Parallax has Superman, he wouldn't just stop at Earth. Like, there's above and beyond. Like, the fact that he can't get hurt any longer, that was his end goal, essentially. But I do love the fact that it starts with, like, this, like, very small idea. The idea of, like, using children to incite fear throughout a city, to grow more strong from that, and then to use that against Superman. Again, very small, humbling beginnings to this, like, overall scheme, which I was like, that's really cool. But it also, again, it's, like, this very dark tale. So,
and it plays into, you know, Superman being a dad now, so he's afraid of stuff now that he never used to be afraid
of. Exactly, even though his child is a super boy.
Is a demigod amongst demigods.
But he can't help himself. He's a dad. Your parents are always going to worry about you.
It's true.
So there you go, guys. That was Superman number 29. If you haven't been reading Superman, this is actually kind of a cool place to jump on board. This looks like it's shaping up to be this, like, grand, awesome fight. And again, like Yellow Lantern Superman, it's really fun, cool design. I kind of dig it. So, you know, I'm wondering how long it's going to last. But still, kind of fun. Was that... Okay, I was like, was this a sneeze? Did you just... What happened?
No, sorry, that was a yawn.
That's fine.
I was trying to do it away from the mic as hard as possible.
You gotta get up, you gotta stretch, you gotta move around. So now we're gonna move on over to Marvel, and we've actually been covering a lot of the Generations books on this show, and so this week will be no
three for three.
Right? This is Generations Wolverine. So Joel, let's talk about Wolvie.
You know, I was going to dance around it, but I think I'll just come out and say it. This is my favorite Generations one so far. I really liked this one. Did you read it too?
I did read it.
What's cool about this one is that it wastes zero time getting started. We join Wolverine on an oh-so-classic Logan image of him fighting hand ninjas. Mm-hmm. He gets overwhelmed only for Laura to come in and save him. And they don't need to have a whole conversation of, who are you? Well, who are you? Well, what time are we in? I don't know. They fight, and in watching Laura fight as the all-new Wolverine, Logan puts two and two together and goes, oh, shit, you're important, and you're not from around here, are you? You're not from around these parts, are you? And then only for Laura to be like, hey, man, I already got up to date on the plot before I got here. I know you're trying to save Akiko, your adopted daughter with Mariko. Let's totally team up and do this, and we can talk later.
Yeah, exactly. They really, like, again, like you said, they cut to the chase, like, at the very least, in the Jean Grey one, like, a lot of that was in her head. Like, she put it together pretty quickly. She recognized, like, what was going on, but it was more, like, there was less, like, dialogue between the two of them about that, which I kind of appreciated, too. But this one was just like, nope, these two, again, they've got heightened senses, so it's kind of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But before we go on, I want to say thank you so much to Michael III for your super chat. Thank you so, so much. Hey guys, just want to say that I enjoy your show. Thanks for keeping it going. Tiff, keep up the good work. Joel, please punch Benny one day. LOL.
I mean, I could get away with punching him, but that dude was in the army and I wasn't, so he'd probably hit me back.
I'm just
saying,
the best chance for that, I'd say, is probably New York Comic Con. A lot of people. You just got to disappear, man. Just disappear.
Disappear into the crowd. Hey, I have a Homer Simpson level of stamina. It's like, I can't hit anyone for anything, but man, I just wait till he's tired.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
And lay one on him. But yeah, Generations, it leads to this whole big thing where they got to fight the Yakuza, they got to run to the Japanese airport, and they eventually discover the one behind this whole kidnapping plot. It's obviously Sabretooth. Who else was it going to be?
Exactly.
And they have this bit where it's like, well, what was Victor Creed's ultimate plan? Oh, I was going to kidnap this little girl that Wolverine has been mentoring. I was going to turn her to the dark side and turn her into a weapon to fight her father. This obviously touches a major nerd with Laura, who's like, hey, that's my origin. I'm not going to let that happen. Blah.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, I love Sabretooth really just like being like, yeah, fine, this is my plan. Like, it's just so like, he's like, I'm not gonna pretend like I didn't have a plan or like that you're not gonna figure out what it was. Like, I don't, fine. It seemed like
We've
a
been
lot of
doing this.
work now that I'm thinking about it anyway.
We've been doing this dance since the 1800s, and we will continue to be doing this dance long into the future.
Exactly.
And then, you know, the issue actually takes another interesting turn that the first two generations didn't. There was a big effort in both the Hulk one and the Jean Grey one that neither young hero really wanted to, like, affect the time stream or say or do anything that could mess it up. Laura kind of, not even really trying to, affects the past in an interesting way, and that is, you know, once Logan saves his adopted kid, he's like, okay, time for me to leave. You know, her life will only be dangerous with me in it. And then Laura, with years worth of experience, says to Logan, no, her life is always going to be dangerous, no matter if you're here or if you're not, just because there's that connection here. How about you buck the hell up and actually go in there and be a dad, read her a story, let her know everything's going to be okay, and don't run away this time. And then once again, Logan, the wheels start turning in his head and being like, oh, you got my mother's eyes and my claws and everything else. I don't know who you are in the future or the alternate dimension that you might be from, but I can only imagine you're mine. And I'm sorry for whatever I did to you or for whatever I will do to you. I love that's where he jumps to, I'm sorry for the things I may or may not have done yet.
Yeah. Well, and again, like, I appreciate, like, he again, it comes down to, like, the healing factor, the claws, the whole thing, the smell, like, all of it. He's just like, yeah. Like,
I'd have to be pretty dumb not to put this, like, together.
I don't have to go on Maury to know that,
you are the father. You are the clone daddy.
Yeah.
And then to even have a moment of him being like, look, you know, do you want to stay? Do you want to come in with us? And she does. And then they have this, like, really nice father-daughter hug moment, and then she disappears into the ether, much like Hulk and Jean Grey did. I'm like, oh, that's really touching. And even the final line, Tom Taylor crafts one hell of a line. It's, you know, I'm Wolverine, I'm the best in the world at what I do, but that doesn't mean I don't have to keep trying.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciated that. Again, like, you know, you pretty said that, like, how touching that scene was. It really was. It was just so sweet. You know, just this, like, realization that, like, for Wolverine, he's just like, no, it really is easy for me to just punch and kill and you know, be at arm's length at all times, or, you know, a country's length away from people who care about me. But, you know, now that I'm faced with someone who had the effects of that, like, it's a lot easier to understand the ramifications of my lack of actions at times.
Yeah. It cut to the heart of the soul of these characters in a really meaningful way. And really, more than the Hulk and Jean Grey book could, because it's like X-23 had been a fixture in Wolverine's life for a long time before she took up the mantle. There was a lot of history there. There was a lot to build on there. Jean Grey was just her literally meeting her older self. Mm-hmm. For Hulk, it was him meeting Banner, which he technically already did in his own book, but it was under very different circumstances, and this Banner didn't know him. It was really a Hulk meeting another Hulk, and they could really only fight. And that was also a thing of, like, being the Hulk is bad. And then even the Jean Grey book was kind of like, being the Phoenix is bad.
Well,
this was the first.
I mean, for me, that was Jean, like, getting a greater understanding.
Yeah. Oh, it was necessary.
You know what I mean? Like, it was very much, and not even just that it was bad. Like, she started, I think, understand, like, the allure.
Severity.
And, like, the, like, oh, how it all went down. It's not like, you know, the Phoenix didn't come off as all bad.
Yeah. I mean, and this issue, too, is kind of like, you know, being Wolverine is dangerous, but it can also be pretty awesome sometimes, too. So you take the bitter with the sweet.
Exactly. So, you know, these generation books, again, I said it last time, and I think we both agree on this at this point, that, like, it really comes down to, I think, the team, like, the writer, like, what story they want to tell. So, you know, if there's a book coming up in generations that there's a writer you enjoy or you've heard good things about, like, there's probably a decent chance it might be an okay story.
Or if it's a run you're reading anyway. I think if you've been reading Wolverine, the all-new Wolverine, you will be very pleasantly surprised by what they do here in this one. I know I dug this one, and I think it's a really nice companion piece. And I forget who else said it, that these generation books in many ways are kind of like the zero issues for Rebirth, and that is that if you haven't been reading this new Marvel status quo, this is a good place to start.
Mm, There you go. There you go, guys.
Because here's the thing. I fell off All New Wolverine just because I was trade waiting. It was basically like, I like this book, but I can't afford it on top of all the other ones that I got to do. After reading this one, I'm like, okay, well, now I got to go back and buy all the floppies and see what Laura's been doing because this was great.
Well, they, and again, it just, it's nice to see, like, a really, like, well-crafted single issue.
Definitely. It's kind of a dying art. They don't do one-and-dones nearly as much anymore.
Yeah, right? Like, sometimes it can be hard or, like, oftentimes, like, rushed. But this definitely felt well-paced. It felt like just a really natural story. A lot of great action, a lot of great fight scenes. Art was really great. I really enjoyed it. Just very, very good. So, you know, we'll see. We'll probably keep covering Generations here. I don't even remember what's coming out next, I'll be honest with you.
Neither do I. I know ones we have to look forward to. We've got the two Captain Marvel ones, one with Marvel and one with Miss Marvel. Then we've got the Captain America ones, obviously. I think Hawkeye is going to be having one as well. Now, that's going to be interesting because it's like, dude, Kate and Clint hang out all the time and do stuff all the time. How are you going to make this story something we haven't seen yet? Maybe, you know what it'll probably be? It'll probably be Kate visiting Clint back when he was still like a supervillain or when he was making the transition from like supervillain to hero. So she'll catch him at a time in his life when she's not used to seeing him.
That would be kind of cool. Like that's like, you know, and she, she'll just have that in there forever.
She'd be like, yeah, you used to wear a really silly costume and you were like a really lame villain until you became an Avenger.
Yeah, no. Now I know all about that. Mm-hmm.
It was the style at the time, Kate. We were all doing it back then.
Look, if we knew now, what we knew then,
Yeah, she can see him in his rebellious youth hanging out at the crime circus with his brother and swordmaster.
Exactly. And she'll be like, yeah, this was not something I wanted to know about. Thanks. Thanks,
mysterious, that was my life,
like forces of the universe.
that has still yet to be explained, the mysterious force that is doing this, exactly. Nor do I think it will be explained.
Right? Yeah. No, that would be like... That would be like her dropping into him as like a teenager. Like he's in his room with the door shut. And she's like, I'm not going in. No.
I'm good. Actually, that would be kind of funny. Kate Bishop meeting teen Clint Barton. That would actually be kind of funny.
Right? And she's just like, and he's hitting on her, and she's like, don't do that.
This is very weird. please don't. And I mean, the Sam and Steve Cap one is going to be really interesting too, especially post Secret Empire to see what that's like.
Because
you'll see the Sam who knows what he knows and remembers what he remembers hanging out with Steve. Or maybe it'll be the other way around. Maybe it'll be Steve hanging out with old Sam.
Right? No idea. But we'll see. We'll keep going on with this. Again, hopefully it's just we get a whole lot of great writers and a whole lot of great, like, just one-shot stories. That'd be awesome. I'd be totally okay with that.
Oh, and Spider-Man and Thor's. How could I forget that one, too?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I thought there was one for Thor. I don't know why I thought you said that.
Also instances of, you guys hang out a lot already, so how are you going to make this one-shot interesting?
They'll do it. Again, if the writer is strong enough, they'll do it, no problem.
I trust the writers of those in particular.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right, real quick, because I'm already looking at the clock here, so I'm very briefly just going to say, hey guys, I read Regression number 4 this week. That's the Cullen Bunn horror story that's going on that includes past lives, and crazy bugs and possession of individuals from those past lives and being incredibly violent and all that stuff. This book, this issue in particular, just kind of kept going with the previous story. We see Adrian essentially in his, like, being possessed version of himself going after Molly, his friend. She kind of takes him out with a couple of well-placed statues and to the head and a swift knee to the groin region, which takes him down for a bit. But when he kind of is still, like, he's with it still, but then he, like, comes back to himself and he apologizes and he's so sad, like, about the whole thing, and he's terrified, and he explains that something happened when he went for that regression therapy, that one session with Sid, who is, of course, dead now, and how, like, Molly immediately is like, this is my fault, whoops. I shouldn't have taken you to that regression therapy. I should not have forced that. Now I have to help you. She knows someone else who works with that kind of thing. They go on a bit of a road trip where Now it's a lot of conversation in this issue. This issue for me, honestly, kind of lagged a little bit. It just kind of seemed like like we're getting from point A to point B, and along the way, though, we do see like a crew of I don't know how to describe them. It's just like this like crew of folk who like clearly have potentially sinister motives. And they all have very darkened eyes, like as though perhaps they too are possessed by something from beyond, the beyond there. And we do go to this new individual eventually, and she is going to put him through regression therapy once again, to try to solve all of this. Again, this issue for me was the weakest of the series so far at number four, which is weird because we really should be coming up to the fifth one, which, you know, Image sometimes does a five or six first arc. And I'm just surprised at how much this kind of lagged for me this time around. So hopefully it'll pick back up. I'm sure this issue is just going to be very important in terms of just general story, like moving and a little bit of character development. But overall, I was like, all right, cool. I mean, I'll grab the next one. But, you know, if this is kind of the status quo now, I don't know. So there you go. So again, just looking at time, we'll come back if we have time at the end for another indie book. But right now,
I may have read an indie book this
yes.
week.
But right now, we're going to talk about Spider-Man 2, number 2,
Spider blood, spider
which is
blood.
funny because I didn't know how to write that down when I was writing down our list of comics. So like, I was
No,
just
neither
like,
did
well, I'll
I.
just try to remember how this all goes down. So yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Spider-Man 2, number 2, Joel.
Not a hell of a lot happened in this issue, to be honest. I was surprised how light this was on actual information. We see Miles and Peter duke it out with the mysterious Taskmaster who came from the portal. Again, no words yet on whether it's 616 Taskmaster, Ultimate Taskmaster, or something different. What we do know, though, is that this Taskmaster is taking orders from 616 Miles Morales, who is some sort of prolific crime figure. And moreover than that, when Peter attempted to get some information on Miles in his universe, we finally get an answer to that. You know, when Peter searched Miles at the end of the original Spider-Man, what did he discover? The answer is, are you ready for it? He discovered nothing. That's what he discovered. He discovered a person who seemingly didn't exist, and then they pass that case off to Jessica Jones, you know, world-class PI and beloved Brian Michael Bendis character who pounds the pavement looking for information on 616 Miles and also comes up empty-handed. He's a ghost. He's a ghost in the machine.
Yeah, exactly. By the way, I love the sequence though of her going through and like hanging out with different characters and clearly going on all these adventures in between the panels essentially.
That was pretty
I was
dope.
like, that's a lot of fun. And again, because Pacelli's drawing it, I'm like, and it looks great.
She goes to a Dazzler concert. There's a bit where she's hanging out with Viper, and Viper is just licking her face. And I'm like, now what's the story behind that
For me,
image?
that was the one I was like, no, that one you need to elaborate on, man. Like, no, you got to tell us what happened there because you know she did not take that for very long.
No. And I'm just like, isn't her saliva poison? Shouldn't that kill you or come close to it?
Eh, she's fine.
It's all good. There was a joke I really appreciated because, you know, Miles comes from school to hang out with Peter. And this is one of the few instances where we actually see Miles and Peter hanging out in civilian clothes. Believe it or not, that actually hasn't happened very often in many of the Spider-Man stuff. And Pete's like, ah, high school. I remember that. I miss being able to carry a backpack around with my costume. I can't do it now. I'm too old. You reach a certain age and you just look like a creep if you're carrying around a backpack.
So no. See, I no, I disagree with that. You see people in New York all the time, like people who are adults and have real jobs and like have to go places, and they have a backpack because it's the easiest thing to carry around.
I think there's a difference between like an adult work backpack and like a kid's school backpack. I think that's what Peter was talking about.
Okay, so he wanted one with like a character on it, with
Yeah, he
himself on
wanted
it.
some. Yeah, because he's a nerd. He's like, obviously, if I could, I would carry around a Spider-Man backpack with my own face on it.
Maybe he carry around the Doctor Strange one.
Oh, he carry around a Captain America one. Well, I love Cap. I love him this much.
That's not a wise thing to do anymore, man.
No, not anymore. It's not. He had to get rid. That's why Peter actually did have a Captain America backpack, but he had to get rid of it. Nope, don't need this anymore.
That's over. That part of my life is done.
Gonna put this back in the closet next to the Ninja Turtle costume. and my fantastic Bagman costume too. They'll be cool again one day.
Sure, you just keep holding that hope.
Put that in the safe deposit closet. And if it seems like we're going off on tangents, that's because that's literally all that happened in this book.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, it's true. I did notice that there's a part in which Peter mentions Wonder Woman.
Yes, just out of nowhere, yeah. Along with the Pope and several other characters,
yeah,
but yes,
I was like,
Wonder Woman.
What are we saying here?
Can you do that? Can you legally do that?
How you getting away with that one?
I mean, he's technically not lying where he's saying, like, oh, I know all these amazing people. I know Wonder Woman. Like, there was a DC Marvel crossover, but I don't think that was you. I think that was the clone, actually.
Also, I mean, you know, at the end of this, we do see Taskmaster meeting up with the other Miles, and, like, he is acutely aware of what the ramifications might be of meeting the other Miles.
That's true, because we haven't really talked about those ramifications of what happens when a 616 character meets their ultimate counterpart. They really haven't gone into great detail. Is it like a time travel thing? Like, if you touch tips, will that destroy the universe?
Right. Well, I've got another, like, just, like, this isn't a, I don't even want to call it a theory. This is just more of a thought exercise, everybody.
Okay.
But maybe what they might be in, like, hinting at here is that the other Miles, the older Miles, isn't even from here.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. They're gonna go around and say, nope, Miles is actually the real 616 version.
Or that this other Miles, like, again, like, you know, like, there has been, I know you've mentioned it before, that there's chatter of, like, potentially a reinvigoration of the Ultimate Universe. I wonder.
Lots of talks about the tear and everything else.
Right, exactly. Like, this Miles and that Taskmaster might be from a totally different universe.
It's likely.
And that, like, maybe there is no Miles here.
Yeah.
And, like,
that's also a thing.
That's, like, an interesting, you know, concept that it's like, okay, so if there is no Miles here, what does that say? What does that indicate? Like, has he just not occurred yet? Was it something, like, so far in the past that we're not aware of it? You know what I mean? Like, and
this Miles also appears to be much older.
Yes, much older. And I'm wondering, like, I think we've talked about this before, is this, like, you know, remember in Back to the Future how Doc Brown is terrified of, well, I guess the second one, really, of the you know, like, themselves running into one another? Like,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Like, when the Jennifers meet, like, that, like, either nothing will happen and they'll pass out, or it'll be, like, the end of, like, you know, like,
everything,
in life as we know it. I wonder if that's the fear, or if they're just concerned that they'll learn about another universe.
That too, you know, or is it one of those things where it's like only one Miles can exist in the same space, you know, but by the end, you know, either there's got to be one or there'll be neither or something like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like infinite possibilities. It's like Rick and Morty. We got 24 hours to make there be only one Miles.
Yeah. So, like, I you know, as much as like not a lot happened in this story, like, it definitely did, like, keep my interest going and in this overall, like, tale, but I do wish that, like, again, like, maybe this issue had been a little tighter. I don't know, you know, like, it just, maybe we could have, like, shortened up some of the beginning parts. I don't know, we'll see what the plan is overall. Again, like,
I'm still interested to see where it goes. I want an answer, that's for sure.
Yeah, I do too. Again, and it could be, like, none of our ideas.
That's true. As the chat just said there, or they could fusion dance into one Miles. Yes, become the one true Miles.
Perfect. I love
it. I must absorb you into myself and take your powers.
Okay, anytime anyone ever says, I must absorb you, no. Thank you, no. No. No, you don't.
Just
you don't have
no.
to do that. I'm sorry. No, you use that word. Mm-mm. No.
Big nope.
No, if we were fusing, fine. If we were fusing, I'll fuse. I'm not going to be absorbed. All right, guys. So that was Spider-Man 2, number 2. And again, like, if you're interested in finding out about, you know, the multiple Miles, just, you know, what's going on with the tear, all of that, then you might want to run out, grab it and the one before that. But otherwise, we'll keep talking about it right here on this show. Before we get to the main event, I very, very briefly just want to talk about a book that came out from DC this week. It's a sweet idea. It's Sandman number 1. The Sandman number one, and it's by Jurgens Orlando. It's a bunch of people. Essentially, it's a couple of stories about the old school Sandman with the yellow
An
costume and the red
anthology.
and the whole thing. And then in the back, there's a bunch of like reprints of little mini Kirby stories because it really is a
Oh, nice.
celebration of Jack Kirby's 100th birthday. And it is so, like, it's just so nice. It's just such a nice idea. And I'm really only going to talk about the first story very, like, briefly. Just because, like, I don't know. I picked it up simply because of my interest in the character. And then, like, after I was done with that, I was like, oh, you could have given me nothing else. I could have paid $5 for the story, and that would have been fine with me. Because all right. So this story starts, and it's very Kirby feeling. It's very like old school like writing style. Like, they definitely tried to invoke that era. Not only in the art, but again in the writing itself, in the storytelling, in the story overall. Like we see the Sandman and he's in the Dream Dome and he has Brute and Glob in capsules behind him. And an alert goes off and there is a child who's dreaming and like his dreams are too intense. And the dreams might
too raw.
They're well, yeah. But like the monsters from the dreams might end up like actually breaking into reality, and he has to stop it. And he can't just go into the child's psyche because like that could damage him forever. But inevitably, he has to, and he must bring Brute and Glob with him. And they go in there, and they go on a merry adventure filled with like crazy psychedelic images and also tons of Kirby crackle.
Always good.
They end up facing all these like crazy dream images, these crazy like just like barriers keeping them out, and in doing so run into a hero who like shows up, and he is silent but like powerful and strong and comes to the aid of the Sandman and Brute and Glob. And the Sandman is like, okay, you guys have to keep fighting here, and I have to go out into reality because I have to wake the child because that's the only way this will stop. And like, we're almost to the point where like there's no return and the monsters will come into the world. And it's just, again, overly dramatic and just very, you know, just over the top and just cheesy and fun. And he gets there and the monsters immediately start to try to stop him because it's about to happen and like reality will be like forever changed, essentially. And that's, again, when the hero, the silent hero, shows up and starts, like, beating the monsters up and all that. And the Sandman, like, wakes the kid up. Literally just wakes him up. He's like, hey, you gotta wake up. Hey, come on. And, by the way, I just want to confirm, this is not Morpheus Sandman. This is not Vertigo Sandman. This is not a Kirby creation either. Kirby was a part of the team that, like, helped to, I think, write him. But, like, this Sandman came. There's been lots of Sandman. Okay,
yeah.
There's, like, detective, you know, creepy-looking Sandman. There's this Sandman.
I always liked that guy.
Yeah, exactly. There's plenty of Sandmen. That's weird to say. So he wakes the kid up, and the monsters all start to disappear, and that's when the Sandman realizes that the hero was also a dream. That, of course, the child's mind would create a hero to battle these foes along with him. And so essentially he's just like, wow, like that's super cool and stuff. And then he realizes that he's just like, wow, I can't believe how much this kid's like dreams were so strong and like inventive and all this stuff. And he starts to see all the like pictures around the room, and like the kid's an artist. And he's just like, well, clearly, like, you have, like, many things you'll create and all that stuff.
Oh, I know where this is going.
Let me finish it, Joel.
No, I'm going to. I'm just saying, oh, I know where this is going.
And on the bed is, like, one image of the hero who helped him along the way. And it's just signed, like, Jacob Kurtzberg, which is, of course, Jack Kirby's real name. And, I was so blown away by the simplicity and the sweetness of that story. And just what a way to honor him. To not only, tell the story in that like style and like to show the art very like close to his style of art, to include the Kirby crackle, but to then like say essentially that this child, like being Jack Kirby, was incredibly imaginative. And he truly was, like, you know, he like single-handedly helped to create so many characters that we've known and love. What's funny is throughout like the dreaming, when like we see like some of the monsters, like one of them kind of look like Fing Fang Foom. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's someone like, that kind of looks like, but you couldn't, wait a minute, hang on, what's going on here? And by the end, you know, you kind of figure it out. But, like, again, like, that was such a sweet story. And, again, there's another story in there, and then there's a bunch of Kirby stories. But for me, that was like the best thing out of the whole book. And I haven't had a chance actually to finish reading all the Kirby backups in there, but like, just such a sweet little story. Like, it made me smile, especially like with so many like heavy things going on in comics right now. This was just a nice definitely. Little like, hey, don't forget, like, this all came from a place of like your heroics and like just do goodery essentially, and here it is for you. Like, it's only a few pages, but it's worth it.
Sounds heartwarming.
It really was. But there you go, guys. That is it for Sandman number one. And it for the show. We're not going to do anything else. We're good. We're not going to go.
Don't even joke about that.
Exactly. If those of you who in the area had a midnight release on very late Tuesday or early Wednesday, whatever you want to call, DC Metal number one came out. Mine, of course, is going to be backwards to you because that's how things work. But I have the Batman riding a T-Rex version.
It's a pretty solid version. I have my version over there, but I'm not going to get up and get it and postpone the show.
We also have the metal, like the midnight release version. It's over there. So here we go. We are venturing into this dark crisis. Joel, you want to start this off?
Sure.
I'll jump in here and there because there's a lot.
Please
do. It's funny because like the book isn't super long. It is dense, but in like more of the way of like it is dense with like interesting bits of continuity and just holding your hand. This book does not hold your hand. It expects you either to know this or to have the gusto to go out and find out about it.
It is continuity porn is what I would call it. It's just like, oh yeah, all the stuff he put in there.
And I gotta tell you, and like maybe we'll talk about it a little bit later. What's interesting though is the continuity that is being picked and it's weird. Cause like there were things I was like, oh, is this a Snyder continuity thing? Like what are we doing here? But we'll talk about that. But yeah, let's talk about the book overall.
The book starts off with a very kind of, how would I describe it? Very, like, James Bond, Raiders of the Lost Ark, like, cold open action scene that's not really related to what happens to the rest of it, but it kind of gets you in the mood and also gives you an action scene at the beginning so you feel satisfied so they can do all their story building.
Right, hang on, real quick, I want to say thank you so much to Alberto. I don't know. Alberto! Oofla. Thank you so much for your super chat. I'm sorry I can't say your last name. That's not anybody's fault but my own. He says, lol, Tiffany just pulled a shut up, Joel. I kind of did, but in a way where I just wanted it. I wanted my moment. This is a really sweet, kind moment.
It was the warmest, most respectful shut up, Joel, I've ever had.
I just would have, like, if we had the technology to do that, I would have, like, pushed you out of the way for a second, just pushed your panel out. But, okay, hang on.
You come back in a second there, but yeah, they're on Warworld fighting Mongol, and in a nice bit of the first nice bit of continuity shout out to the rest of the league is like, hey Superman, weren't you fighting him and Zod last week? How did he get a new Warworld so quickly? And the answer is he kidnapped Hero the Toy Man to build it for him. Friggin' times are tough, man. Mongol is outsourcing the building of his war coliseums now.
To be fair, Mongol doesn't strike me as, like, an architect or an engineer.
No.
Maybe that's just me.
Not really. I'm sure he's there motivating people. Fast hands means less whipping.
He's a great manager. Great manager.
Always remembers a birthday, that Mongol.
He sure does. You get extra beatings that day.
Of course, just to make sure you don't rise above your station. There's the great shot of all the heroes in the armor. In fact, it's the bit that we used as the thumbnail for this very episode. What's cool about that armor is it doesn't actually help you. In fact, it actively hinders the hero's abilities.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. And then again, we go into great detail explaining what each of them does.
Yeah, I thought that was really smart.
Yeah.
Of course, Batman, being the genius that he is, realizes that all these killer Justice League colored robots that Hero has built that has been sent to kill them aren't actually meant to kill them at all, because Hero is a giant nerdy otaku. When you press the button, they turn into a giant Justice League Megazord.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Batman uses like Latin and root words to figure this whole thing out, which is funny because words will end up being his undoing at the end of this.
Oh, yes, they will. Man, Batman's probably like, Jesus, I wish I didn't get that degree in languages like I did, or else I wouldn't know how screwed I was. You're right. The power of words is quite a thing in this issue. I did not see that theme until you brought it up. But yeah, so all the heroes return back to Earth. And, you know, it's one of those situations where it's like, hey, Batman, that Warworld mission you sent us on was pretty weird. Is this all about that weird metal conspiracy you're chasing? And Batman's like, you know, maybe, possibly, don't talk to me about it. Oh, no, Gotham has been leveled because a giant mountain is now sticking out of it.
Yeah. So that happened.
you literally can't leave Gotham for more than 5 minutes or else some horrible disaster will take place.
And, like, for a second, everyone's looking at Clayface like, did you get some sort of new power we need to be aware of? He's like, this is not me, man. This
wasn't me.
Wasn't me.
it's like Shaggy, wasn't me. This mountain turns out to actually be Challenger's Mountain, belonging to the Challengers of the Unknown. It is filled with the exact same dark energy signature that Batman has been chasing in the Forged and the Casting. Mm-hmm. It also has a cryo chamber filled with a few people and at least one robot. Red Tornado is there, and they make a solid point of saying this is the first time the Justice League is actually meeting Red Tornado.
Right.
It's definitely the first time I think this version of Red Tornado has shown up. There was the Lady version in Earth 2. I know some people were saying apparently that series of shorts starring the Metal Man and Red Tornado's creator, Tio Moro, apparently he was there for a second, but most fans didn't know that, and Scott Snyder didn't know that, because for all intents and purposes, we're meeting him for the first time.
Right. And again, that's why I'm starting to wonder if he's picking and choosing as he sees fit. It's difficult to tell.
There's a hell of a concentration being done to Earth 2 characters and Earth 2 adjacent characters, because they meet the Blackhawks, of course, the military order that Batman has been feuding with in the other Scott Snyder book. We meet their leader, Lady Blackhawk, mm-hmm. only to discover, hey, it's Kendra Saunders. It's the original Hawkwoman, is what it is. Hats off for that piece of retconning, because I've been saying forever, when is Hawkwoman going to come over to the main universe, because Earth 2 Hawkwoman was so cool. The answer is Hawkwoman was always here, you just didn't know.
Exactly. Surprise.
Loved that piece. Right, she's hung up her wings and her mace because, you know, her lover and partner, Carter Hall, the Hawkman, went missing in another dimension with his team, the Challengers of the Unknown, to try and get to the bottom of this whole dark metal thing, and he hasn't come back yet.
Mm-hmm. No, I gotta tell you again, like, and I'm just gonna mention, like, that, like, for me, with this whole continuity thing, right, like, so he's pulling from like, Earth 2. He's pulling from All-Star, right, which was, like, questionably in or not in continuity.
Yeah, they reference the events of All-Star in other books, so but then
and they also reference what's going on in Superman, like, what just, you know, with the whole Action Comics thing, you know what I mean?
Yes,
like, they
what just transpired.
Reference that. So, does that mean that the other books, like, Action Detective, are going to need to reference what has happened here? Because this is
Certain.
But, like, will they? You know what I mean? Or is this just Snyder doing what he's doing? You know what I mean? Like, I do wish that DC would just... It's okay to tell us, guys. It's okay to say, like, hey, everybody, I know, like, you know, part of what we're doing has to do with continuity, especially, like, having, you know, gone back to, like, trying to bring back characters that everyone was asking for and such. Let us tell you what we're operating with here. And, like,
it is funny that Detective and Action won't have tie-ins, but, like, Green Arrow and Suicide Squad and Teen Titans will have tie-ins.
Right? And like, Action won't, because Action's doing its own thing right now. They're going to be doing the reveal of Mr. Oz, so we got that going on while this is happening simultaneously, and it's like, well, when are they set then?
They're having a busy week. It's
right?
A real,
like,
busy
Superman's
week.
Superman's going to be really busy.
He's going to be real tired. He's got a lot he's got to do. But yeah, so Kendra gets all the other heroes up to speed on what Batman already knew about the metal, how it's got this corrupting dark energy nature. But moreover than that, she explains that the evil metal comes from the dark universe. There's the multiverse as we know it, made up of 52 Earths, and we know it's 52 Earths because she literally pulls out Grant Morrison's map from Multiversity.
Yeah, well, he loaned it out to her.
He did. Man, if frickin' the writer, which is Grant Morrison, if he showed up, hello, it's just me, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense.
You're like, yeah, no, I really should have seen that coming. I don't know why I didn't. All right.
I love her explanation of the dark multiverse too, because it's basically just like Stranger Things, where it's like, okay, here's the Earth as we know it, but then I turn it upside down. Oh, and it's black. That's the dark universe.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's gonna be like four adorable boys who are gonna have to defeat
and
a
one
big
bald
scary
girl.
Monster. Yeah, it's gonna be awesome.
And instead of the Demigorgon, the big evil baddie that the, you know, Bat Tribe cultists who exist in the universe and who have been referenced a couple times, they worship Barbatos, who is, of course, the evil, possibly devil creature that Grant Morrison created and wrote about during his run.
Right, right.
Who had a very strong connection to Batman and the Wayne family, and indeed Kendra Saunders goes on to say, yeah, here's the thing, Barbatos to enter our realm needs a, you know, needs a portal, needs a wagon, as it's said here in the scripture. And hey, what's the root word of wagon? Why, it's Wayne, go figure.
For, you know what's funny is that is such a, like, Sherlock Holmesian twist where it's
yeah,
just
it
like, you would have never figured this out, but they knew because I wrote it down.
Damn right. And Batman in that moment is like, ah, oh, fuck. Everyone's looking at me now. It's me now. Jumps out a window, catches a raptor, and then rides it all the way back
exactly.
to Wayne Man.
Now, I appreciate that we do get something similar to this, but it's not a T-Rex.
No, it was just a raptor with feathers.
Yeah, yeah, which is fine. That's you know, much closer to raptors are a little smaller than that, but so maybe it's not a raptor, maybe it's something similar. I'm not a paleontologist.
No, I would have loved to have seen like a Simpsons smash cut to like the front yard of Wayne Manor. Batman has pulled up and he's left the dinosaur on the front yard as he comes running in. Alfred,
no,
Alfred.
He took the sub. He had his sub show up, so he'd have to like pack him in the back and be like, I can't leave you, buddy. Hop in.
I love you too much.
Yeah. Now you're Dino Bat. Yeah.
Oh, shit, man. Look, we can repurpose some of these Ace the Bat Hound costumes, and
exactly.
Now we have Bat Raptor.
Look, Alfred, I know we have to deal with this mountain and impending darkness and who the hell knows what else, but I need you to get on costuming for this guy.
For this dinosaur. It's going to be the hip new thing.
Get on that.
It's, you know, so he, not only did Batman leave, but he stole something while he was there. Batman's just the worst house guest ever. You invite him to your island stronghold, he breaks a window, he steals a dinosaur, he takes your piece of metal.
Yeah.
And he's just like, ah, oh, shit, I'm hearing voices essentially taking me to a secret place in my mansion that I didn't know existed. And that is because all throughout the issue, we see the secret journal of Carter Hall and everything he learned about the metal and the dark universe and this conspiracy. And he says, you know, the two tribes that have been warring since time immemorial, the tribe of the bird and the tribe of the bat, the Waynes used to belong to the tribe of the bat, but they famously left, joined the tribe of the bird. And that is why in Wayne Manor, he finds like a floorboard that he never knew before, opened it up, finds the journal inside, and the only reason he's able to find the journal is because motherfucking Dream of the Endless came to him and said, hey man, thought you should look at this.
So, all right, but let's talk about that really quickly. I just did a whole video about that. I just want to...
Good, I'm glad you did.
I want to confirm who this is. This is not Morpheus. He only introduces himself as Dream of the Endless. He is, in fact, Daniel Hall, grandson of Carter and Shaira Hall.
Yep.
He is actually the son of Hippolyta Trevor Hall, who back in, like, Earth One, I think, was actually, like, Wonder Woman for a little bit, or, like, daughter of... It's a whole thing. And then, not anymore. They were like, it's not happening. But she ends up, like, getting with Hector Hall, who is, of course, Carter's son. He ends up being Silver Scarab for a little bit. His suit is made entirely out of nth metal.
Yep.
And he,
so it all comes back to the Hall family in metal.
Exactly. But Lita's child essentially ends up in the Dreaming, which is it's actually a false dreaming that is established in one of the Vertigo Sandman books. And because of that, because of how long she's in there, when Morpheus, the dream, the Lord of Dreams, essentially, Dream of the Endless, shows up and he's like, this kid is kind of mine now, so one day I'll come for him. And he eventually does, and actually looks like Joel has frozen, so we'll see how this all goes down here, guys. It was Dream. He showed up. Oh, are you still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you, but your screen is frozen, so that's okay.
Oh no.
But he ends up being born. He ends up entering the dreaming as a young child. The whole thing goes down that ends with a changeover, without me spoiling the end of Sandman, because apparently people were upset about that, even though the book came out like 20 years ago. There ends up being a change of regime, essentially, and Daniel Hall ends up being infused with the essence of Dream, and he now has all of the memories of his 3-year-old self and the awareness that he was a child, but also all of the memories of Dream the Endless, which stretches back 10 billion years.
So that's a lot.
He's got a lot going on. He has shown up in other books. He has like interacted with various like DC characters throughout the years. So this is not a huge surprise. For me, it's funny because while Dream is intrinsically tied to Hawkman, to Hawkgirl, to Nth Metal to some degree because of that, it's funny because like so much of this comes from like the idea of like this knowledge and what's going to happen and all that stuff. And it's like, you guys really should talk to Destiny, because Destiny is one of the other Endless, and he holds the book of like the past, present, and future. He knows all things that will occur.
More like the Book of Spoilers.
Right? Yeah, pretty much.
Never watch anything with that guy.
Yeah, he'll just ruin it all for you. But you know, for me, this is exciting because like you know, with like characters like Constantine kind of being rolled back into DC, he's not so much, he's a Vertigo creation, but like not so much in their hands anymore. We did have Sandman Overture that came out a couple years ago, but we haven't seen too much of the Vertigo characters interacting in main DC, and that was always a thing that I had been pitching forever. I was like, why don't we see them? Why don't we have like Death show up? Because Death has shown up, but where is she? Why isn't she there more? And now we kind of know why, because we're apparently waiting. And as it turns out, Snyder did talk to Neil Gaiman, because he's
Yes, he
famously
got blessing.
protective of those characters, even though he doesn't like, I don't know how the rights work out for that. Like, I think Vertigo really does hold on to them, but they're very respectful of his wishes.
Yeah, most death. I thought it was cool as hell. Again, you know, man, Scott Snyder is a master of making connections. I imagine he has a giant string theory board of how all these characters relate to each other and what haven't we brought in and what characters can I work back into continuity.
No, it's true. And what's funny though is with Snyder tying this into this overarching like whole rebirth that's occurring, my question, my silent question, because it was one of those things where I'm like, this is not something anyone cares about, and now all of a sudden Dream of the Endless is here, so now it's like, no, people do care about this. I'm like, okay, cool. How will Dr. Manhattan tie in if the Endless exist?
That's true.
Did he, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird to have these like godlike figures,
All clashing, seemingly.
right? Or like, who created who? Or have they just always been there?
And where is the power ranking? Are the Endless above the new gods, and is Dr. Manhattan above all of
Right.
them?
I don't know. I don't know. And that, like, that I would kind of get. Like, that would irk me a little bit. A little bit. Little bit. I would. But what's funny is like them being like talking about the multiversity map and like how like it's like there are 52 worlds, right? Like there you go. It's funny because in Sandman at one point, during this one arc, Morpheus mentions that there had been another like universe, Earth, whatever you want to call it, another place where everything went wrong. It all went wrong, and it was like blinked out of existence. And then we came here.
What if it wasn't blinked out of existence?
Right, or like the idea of like there always are 52, so like something might have like taken its place. Like if that is part of this whole thing and like that concept, that's funny. Like, would a new universe be born then?
That'll probably be the Dark Matter universe that we'll probably end up following, or at
I
least the
don't
Dark
know.
Matter imprint.
Or will that even be a factor at all? Probably not. I just thought
Maybe.
that was kind of interesting. And again, thought exercise, people. Thought
They
exercises.
definitely do a good job, you know, raising the stakes, being like, no, this shit's so important and so huge, fucking Dream had to get
Yeah,
involved.
Dream had to show up. And again, part of it too is like he does, to some degree, have the memories of being a child, of being human. And in so I'm wondering if he does, you know, at the very least, like warmly remember his mother to some degree, and just the fact that he is connected to the halls. And yes, everyone, I do know that Joel's still frozen, but the only thing that'll fix that is if we end the call, and then that'll be a disaster.
Yeah, and we're almost done. Another thing that, you know, I'm going to enjoy going forward is that, you know, Scott Snyder has been so good to Batman and vice versa for so long. Now, essentially, for this event, Batman is the villain, and he's on the run now, because the other heroes are like, whoa, wait, he's going to be the portal, and he ran away? I think we need to stop him.
Right? Yeah, no, yes, I definitely agree with you. It's just so funny for me right now how much I cannot get over that, like, Dream is there. Like, that's all I can think about it. But it's like, he might barely be a part of it. Like, he might be just in the next issue and that's the end of it. But I'm still like...
This might be the only thing we see of him.
Right? Here's what's funny is with, okay, random, like, I'm a crazy person, right? And I'm like, here we go. I'm going to pull it all together. No, I'm not pulling anything together, guys. Not pulling anything together at all here. This is, again, just, here's my string board. You know, they're calling, like, Duke the Light, and there's something up with Duke, right?
Yes, the signal.
Okay, here's what's funny. In, like, Sandman, there is a moment, and it happens every X amount of years, right, where a person becomes this thing called the Vortex, and, like, all dreaming is focused upon them, and if they're not killed, they end up destroying the world. That's what happened in that other place.
Well, fuck.
And I'm like, what if Duke's the next Vortex? No,
that would
happen.
Be some crazy. Notice Duke, despite being very important at the end of the casting, was not in this issue.
I know. I don't think that's what's going to happen, even remotely. Unless the only way to save it is to send him into the Dark Universe. I don't think so. It's just, again, it's just a funny thought I had. Just so much you can do with this, because there's so much continuity happening here. For the good, for the bad, they bring up a lot of things that are fun to, like, hey, that's a fun reference, just in general. Mm-hmm. And, like, at the same time, like, Snyder's also, I think he's a very competent storyteller. So, like, he did a really good job of giving you a lot, but also, like keeping himself reserved. Like, he has a lot of, like, not only patience, but, like, he has the ability to be like, okay, I'm not going to give you everything. I totally could. But, like, I'm here are some breadcrumbs. Here's a little bit of action.
My hope is with this, which is indeed my thing with every Scott Snyder book I've read, loved it all the way through. Usually right at the end, though, he has a problem sticking the landing a lot of the time where it's like, oh, really? That was it?
Right.
I hope he can stick the landing on this one because the ride is always so great. And then it's like, oh, you're done. Oh, I was having so much fun before. That was good. That was good.
Right? No, I totally agree with you on that. So hopefully... This has proven to be something that's really big. People are super excited about this. So, you know, no pressure, Scott.
no pressure. It's just the biggest story you've ever written. And even he said, this is the biggest story I've ever written, tying together not only everything I've ever written before, but the entire universes and sometimes even other universes.
Right? Even Vertigo. Hey, yeah, we're just going to pull that in. That's cool. It's totally cool. See, here's the thing. Like, for me, Snyder has, like, opened the door. He's just like, no, other writers, it's cool. Like, just talk to Neil. Tell him what you want to do. He might be totally fine with it. And then none of them will do anything. It's like...
Man, as the chat's saying, I can't wait for when, like, Spider Jerusalem and Jesse Custard show up in the DC universe.
Right? Like, you know, DC owns Vertigo. They have the rights to use them. Like, all they have to do is really just ask their creators, you know? Like, go for it. The Sandman universe, like, had borrowed from DC to begin with. We saw, like... people and heroes from DC in the Sandman universe, so it makes sense to see Sandman here. Just go with it. You don't have to use it all the time, but, like, it'd be kind of fun.
If you got a really good pitch for it.
Yeah, give it a shot. Just try it out. But again, I do wish that DC would come, like, out and just say that, hey, here's the continuity thing here. Like, you know, this is what their... you know, doing over here with the Snyder book, this is what is continuity, and it does or does not tie in. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to spoil anything necessarily to tell us, like, just give us an idea of, like, what your roadmap is and, like, what you're pulling from the past.
Yeah. That's fair.
Right? I would like that. I would like to have, like, some point of reference.
And, I mean, if I wasn't hooked before on Dark Knight's Metal, I'm definitely hooked now because they basically thrown down the gauntlet and said, anything can happen now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, they definitely have. Once you introduce the idea of a dream world and a character who can control that dream world and can create and destroy within it, So, yeah, like, unless, again, he's just there to be like, hey, yeah, that's my grandpa's journal, and that's cool.
Bye.
Yeah, I really hope it's not that. Especially, I don't know why he would have to get permission for something like that, so that leads me to believe there's something, like, a greater purpose to his arrival. So.
It's also one of those instances where I wish the camera could have lingered on that just a little bit longer for Batman to be like, who the fuck are you?
Yeah, right? Well, he tells him who he is.
What are you, you weird ghost man? Well, I'll tell you, Batman. Then he sits down and he regales him with the entire storyline of Sandman.
He's like, hey, well, really, it's just these snippets. This is all you really need to know. It's just the following things. That's where I come in. So, yeah, anyway, big doings.
Very big doings.
Honestly, I gotta tell you, like the casting in The Forge, like, I was interested. I was definitely like, all right, this is cool. This issue was so tight, though, that I'm like, yeah, all right, yep. I'm really looking forward to the next one for this.
Yeah,
so.
Same here.
So there you go, guys. That was our chat about Dark Knight's Metal number one. If you didn't go ahead and get this, well, it's probably because it either sold out wherever you were, or you just, no. I don't know, maybe you're not a fan. But you should check it out, at the very least. It's a fun mystery story. Again, like I've said that before, I like when writers provide us with a mystery like this, with a seemingly well-crafted mystery. This is only the first issue, so it's kind of hard to judge that necessarily, but it's still very exciting nonetheless. And we have, you know, Dream of the Endless, which means who knows who else might show up from the Endless.
Yeah, I mean, in one issue, hey, you got Dream, you got Hawkwoman, you got Red Tornado, you got the Challengers of the Unknown. Here's a bunch of shit you thought was gone, wasn't really gone.
Right? I'm not gonna lie, when they were talking about the Challengers and, like, what they heard, I was like, this is like, oh my god, what is it? The movie with Sam Neill, the thing, the ball, Morpheus is in it.
Yeah, I know the one you're talking about.
Come on, brain. I got nothing. My brain is just putting the wrong word in there. But that's what it reminded me of. Someone in the chat will tell me what it is, and I'll go first.
Rollerball, that was the one.
I'm going to hit you. If I could hit you through the internet, I would definitely do that. Event Horizon!
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. That's the one I was thinking of. No, Sphere, I think, is with Dustin Hoffman. But yeah, you know what I mean? Where it's all, like, crazy. And, yeah, that's kind of what that, like, that's in my head what happened. They went to, like, a scary demon place, like hell, essentially.
Yeah.
You don't.
Wasn't a good time.
You don't want to go there. It's not good. Don't open that capsule. That was the right call. It's not good. Whatever's in there is not good. So there you go, guys. That's it. Wait, hang on. Before we go, we've gone so far over time, but I'm gonna support Joel in his plea to read Southern Bastards, guys. If you like indie at all, go support some indie books here and there. Look what happened.
It's back now.
Technically, Vertigo is an indie book. Or not Vertigo, but it's an indie imprint. It's, you know, Sandman was an indie book, and look where it is now.
Absolutely.
Not that it really needed this, because Neil Gaiman's an incredibly competent and talented writer, so.
Oh, yeah. But basically, yeah, with Southern Bastards, it took a long saga-like break due to tragedy in Jason Latour and the editor's family. It's back now. It's back strong. Go and read it, because it's the best crime comic being written currently. Plus, it's Jason Aaron, and who doesn't love Jason Aaron? The man's a hit machine.
Yep, I love him.
I love him from his shiny head to his big bushy beard.
It just made me think of Hot Fuzz.
A great big bushy beard.
Skeleton.
We're going to be up to our balls in jugglers, Tiff.
Ah, crusty jugglers. All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us again. This is another kind of long episode, but we knew with the Dark Knight's Metal 1 coming out that this, we were going to have a lot to talk about with this. A lot of excitement brewing in the comic book universe. We had a lot going on this week. A lot of it kind of darker on the darker scope, though. You know, you got Batman with this creepy dinner. You got Superman with Parallax. You have what happened in Dark Knights just in general, and then you had like some really like sweet things like Generation Wolverine, very sweet moment there, and even with Sandman having come out this week, just like nice, like opposite end of the spectrum, but like just good balance this week. And again, I apologize that Joel has frozen. The fix to this, I feel like, would be worse. We can still hear him, and it's his words that matter. And honestly, Joel, it's not a terrible face that you're making. You're just kind of, you're very pensive and a little blurry because you're moving. So it all kind of worked out at the end.
That's good. Yeah. Someone screen-capped one from Elseworlds Exchange the other day where I look like a freaking grudge ghost.
Oh, yeah, no, this is fine. If I got to tell you, were it something that were, like, unkind to you or, not good, I would have, like, we got to fix this now.
If I'm making some sort of horrible O face.
Yeah, exactly. We would have put the cover back up. We would have fixed this whole thing. But considering it was fine, I was like, we're okay. We'll just keep going. Unstopped. That's good. Just keep going on with it. All right, guys. Don't forget, if you want to hang out with us more individually, you can go on over to @CapeJoel on Twitter. Find out what he's doing. Just hear all kinds of Joel thoughts and just, you know, follow him, hang out with him there. And over on Twitter, you can find me @TheRealZoobs. And there's a cat down here now. But don't forget to come back every Thursday where we will talk about the comics that come out each week. And if you want to hang out with the weekly poll game, that's over on
Elemental. We should have
Monster.
A game.
Yeah, right? The weekly poll game. It involves drinking. You can head over to Eligible Monster every Tuesday. That's over on Twitch to see that show. We're talking about comic news, pop culture, all that stuff. Also, be on the lookout for some potential exciting news about podcasts. This podcast, along with the Weekly Poll and the Elseworlds Exchange, has made it to the final rounds for podcast awards. So we're all very excited about that. Thank you guys so much for voting for everyone, for the Weekly Poll, for Elseworlds Exchange, for the poll. We can't thank you guys enough. It really is just, like, so kind of you. Like, I don't know how else to put that, but that's so, like, cool and nice of you guys to do that.
Well said.
It's just, yeah. It's all because of you guys. Thank you so much.
And if you're a judge from this certain production or listening to the show right now, maybe consider us just a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Some people, I think, received emails as part of that. I don't know if that was anybody who registered, but if so, check your emails. You might have been selected for that. But again,
the rules are fuzzy.
They are, but, like, still, regardless, like, thank you guys so much for even getting us this far. Like, it's above and beyond. It's just so nice of you. So that's it. We will see you guys next week. Have an awesome weekend. And again, if you didn't pick up any of the books that we recommended, go do that and have some fun reading them this weekend. And then we'll go back and we'll talk some more next week. So we'll see you guys then. Alan Scott.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.